Welcome to Trillo Talk. This is a podcast dedicated to topics that we think are important to the profession of medical writing. And our goal is to bring topical issues to the forefront and hopefully spark conversations in the wider domain about these issues.
Hello again. I'm Julia Fiona-Klaproth, Senior Partner at Trilogy Writing and Consulting. And I'm here today with Lisa Chamberlain-James, also a senior partner at Trilogy. Good to have you here today, Lisa.
Hi, Julia. It's great to be here.
So this is our second question and answer session on Trillo Talk, in which we're answering questions sent to us by medical writers. And today, we thought we'd just focus on questions about general writing principles, those questions that kind of don't belong to any particular category, but are important to answer nonetheless. So let's dive in with the first question. How to convince clients about the benefits of lean writing? Well, that is an excellent question.
And I know
it's something that a lot of people struggle with regularly. And I think, just the first thing off my head is probably the strongest argument is to tell the teams that you're working with that the agency assessors are really begging us to use lean writing.
Yeah.
You and I were part of a committee at the American Medical Writers Association where we did a survey of the regulators. And it was very clear from the responses we got that they are asking for documents to be leaner, more concise, more clear. So it's not just us as sort of geeky medical writers saying, please use less words, everybody. The regulators are saying this is one of their biggest pain points. They see that as one of the biggest quality issues. And they even went so far as to say they think that having documents that are not lean delays the potential of getting approval of products.
Oh, so absolutely.
This is a serious issue, and it's not just us saying it. It's the regulators.
No, I totally agree. And given that the regulators are actually the target audience for all the submission documents, it really makes sense to listen to them. One of them, I remember when we spoke to them, even said that they could tell when a professional medical writer had been involved in writing a submission. They couldn't always tell which parts or if all of it or some of it, but they could definitely tell if a professional medical writer had been involved, which I think speaks volumes. So this is definitely one of the key issues and one of the things that they are telling us that they really appreciate about professional medical writing.
Yeah, absolutely. So, that's certainly where I would start. If you're trying to convince a team why you should use lean writing, send them the article. I've actually done that with multiple teams. I've been working with some other medical writers who've asked me this in the past, and I've said, write them an email and attach the article. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, it's called The Value of Medical Writing, The Regulator's Perspective, and it was published in both the AMWA and the EMWA journals in 2021. So get a copy of it, familiarize yourself with it, and give it to your clients, because, what greater argument is there than to have it straight from the horse's mouth? This is what the target audience wants us to do.
Oh, absolutely. And for anyone who doesn't know, it's free. It's not behind a paywall. So you should be able to access that article. It's part of a suite of articles. And we'd firmly encourage you to look at the whole suite because they all look at different aspects of professional medical writing. And all of them are really insightful and really seminal articles. And the work is ongoing. There'll be more articles coming out. So watch this space. But definitely, if you're not familiar with that set of articles, please go look at it, look at them, send them, disseminate them to your teams, to your clients, to your companies. And it's definitely the best way of having the proof that you need to back yourself up for what you know professional medical writing is about and is important without it being just your word for it. You can actually, this is independent work. It's really, really important.
So that's the first step. Giving them some really convincing arguments. But of course, ultimately what you're dealing with is human behavior. And it's about breaking habits. Unfortunately, people have been writing non-lean text for decades. And a lot of people don't even understand, you know, that they earnestly believe that repeating all of the data in text is writing a summary of that data.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to do beyond giving them the justification that people want this is to show them the why and to break their habits. And breaking habits in humans is challenging.
Hard.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So it begins with helping them understand why. You actually have to explain to them the difference between a repetition of data in text and a summary. And to do that, you should show them examples. This is what non-lean text looks like. This is what good lean text looks like. It's text that focuses on the message, on what we're trying to say about the data, not just, again, a regurgitation of a table or a graph in text. And I think the other thing to keep in mind is to remember that lean does not mean minimal. A lot of people on teams that I've encountered are afraid of lean because they think it's going to mean the data are in table two. That's not lean text. That's not anything. There's no message. There's nothing there. So it's also helping them understand that they don't need to be afraid of lean text because it's still going to say something. I think that's where some of the anxiety comes from when you're confronted with teams. They think, well, if we go lean, then I'm not actually saying anything. And that's not true. And that's where showing them the examples can really help, because they'll see that that text is still going to include data. It's going to tell the reader what it is we believe those data mean. And, you know, they'll relax a bit about it.
You're absolutely right. And I think there's also a very old mindset of the more I say is, it means that the more I know. Whereas actually the reverse is true. And people need to remember it's not about what you're saying about yourself as a writer. It should be about the data and the messages you're trying to convey. And it's a different mindset. And it's about helping the reader, and in this case, the reviewer, to get the message that the data are trying to convey. And you're not going to do that by just repeating the data different ways, because you're still then asking them to work out what the messages are.
Right.
So the whole point of the text is to explain the key messages from the data. Now, sometimes, you have to say what the data points are. Absolutely. And lean writing also doesn't mean never mentioning a number or never having any repetition at all. And I think
totally
that's a misconception as well. People think, oh, no, this isn't lean because you've put numbers in and the numbers can only stay in the tables. That's not what it's about. Very often, to make the message clear and understandable, you have to repeat the key data points. But the important word there is key, not all of the data points.
Exactly. Yeah.
So there is, I was going to say it's a subtle difference, but it's not actually. It's a huge difference. But it is a misunderstanding, I think, throughout a lot of the industry about what lean actually is.
Yeah.
And I love what you said, actually. I think that really captures it. Lean doesn't mean minimal. Mm-hmm. Lean means concise and supported messaging.
Exactly. Supported messaging. Wonderful way of saying it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I hope that answered that question. Let's move on to the next one. So this one is a hopefully a short and sweet one. I think I like it, though.
Yeah.
There are different ideas about how to handle abbreviations in documents. What is the current thinking about this? Now, when we started in the industry, I won't say how long ago that was.
Oh, but please don't. That would be really, really embarrassing.
You know, originally back then in the dark ages, it was standard to write out abbreviations at first use. And then thereafter, always only use the abbreviation. The abbreviation would also be defined in a list of abbreviations. That was very much back in the day where people, first of all, still worked essentially only on paper. And they did tend to read these documents a bit like books. They would start at the beginning and they would work their way through it. What we know now, driven largely, I think, by the rise of electronic media. We read these things electronically. We do a lot of jumping back and forth between documents and between places. Is people don't read these things like books. They don't start at the beginning and work their way through it.
Well, then so the new restructuring as well is to make these documents more modular. So they're being designed to be able to have pieces taken out of them and then maybe reused in different places.
Other places, exactly.
Exactly.
So the point of defining an abbreviation at first use, wherever first use is, becomes obsolete because you're not starting at the beginning and working your way through. So you may never hit first use. And in fact, by virtue of having a list of abbreviations, if somebody hits an abbreviation they don't know, that's where they're going to go. They're not going to try and find the first use of that in the document.
Exactly.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
They're going to go straight back to the list of abbreviations. And so what has happened is that the thinking on this has evolved to the point now where pretty much the standard has become you simply abbreviate everywhere. There is no need to spell out at first use. And you make sure the abbreviation is used in the list of abbreviations.
So, absolutely. And it's so much less hassle in terms of QC. You don't have to keep checking when the first use actually was. Mm. How have I defined it there? And that changes the formatting and the page numbering. And it's
just the dog chasing their tail, right?
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. This is so much easier. And as you said, you know, anybody wants to know what an abbreviation stands for, they're not going to go scrolling back through a document. They're going to go straight to the list of abbreviations anyway. So the whole thing is pointless.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So that's that one in abbreviations. Next question. Why doesn't Transcelerate recommend a standalone discussion section? I love this one because this really gets into the philosophy of how these documents work together and what function each of them serves relative to the others. And I think it's that wide angle view that you have to understand this. So for those of you who are wondering what the heck I'm talking about, let me explain. The CSR, the clinical study report, is intended as a mechanism to report the outcomes of a single study. And that report will, assuming everything goes well with the program, ultimately be included as part of a submission dossier in the future to support a marketing application. And what we realized, we meaning speaking for
the
us,
industry.
The industry, exactly, not the royal we. we realized over the past few decades that if you get into too much detail in the discussion in a single study report, you can back yourself into a corner about what all of it means, because that's only one study. What happens if the next study in that program shows you something completely different? And the next study shows you something in between the two.
Yeah.
And what we began to realize is the place to have a discussion about what those data really mean is when you're writing about it in the context of your dossier, particularly in your clinical overview, where there's a benefit risk section.
Yeah.
And so that has really swung away from having a detailed discussion in individual studies, which are only looking at that particular snapshot, to having a holistic discussion about all of the data. What do all of the data mean when I look across the studies?
And put in context, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And so really that's the rationale for why Transcelerate says, don't have a discussion in your clinical study report. Save the discussion for the benefit risk analysis that you're going to write in your clinical overview.
And that makes complete sense. I mean, there are many studies that a discussion doesn't really make any sense to carry on. You can draw a conclusion. Obviously, there has to be a conclusion from any experiment, and a CSR is a big experiment. So there has to be a conclusion, but a discussion, especially in the early stages, it's almost a nonsense to try and stretch that.
Well, it's premature, right?
Exactly.
You don't have enough data points to really say, is this really what we're always going to see? You know, I've seen this piece and this is how it compares to the rest of the industry, but maybe tomorrow I'll see something else.
Exactly. And it almost becomes a kind of a crystal ball exercise.
Yeah.
Which is not what a discussion is meant to be at all. So, yeah, it completely makes sense and should also make the CSRs leaner and more concise and all those good things that we've just been talking about that will help the review. Absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you for listening to Trillo Talk today. If you enjoyed it, please come back and listen to us again. If you have feedback on this or any of our sessions, we would love to hear it. In addition, if you have ideas for future topics that you'd like us to cover, particularly something you think the community should be talking about, let us know. We would like this to be an ongoing conversation with medical writers at large, and you can send us comments on our Twitter feed or on our LinkedIn page. Just a reminder, you can find all our episodes of the Trillo Talk podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and trilogywriting.com/Trillo Talk. Have a good rest of your day.